from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, good evening, good evening, wherever you are listening from. We are glad you're here. You are listening to Rated LGBT Radio, and I am your host, Rob Watson. And tonight we have, I think, a very exciting guest whose talent I am completely in awe of, and his method of expression is incredible. The artist of whom I'm speaking is body painter and artist Andy Gulub. And Andy is New York City based. He is also the founder of a nonprofit called the Human Connection Arts. And through that group, they have created an event called Protest Against Divisiveness, which we on this radio show have talked about numerous times, about the divisiveness in this country, the divisiveness about the groups and the theys and all of that. And so Andy has decided to tackle this in, to say an unconventional way is an understatement. He is doing it through art and painting. His canvas is not canvas. It is human bodies, naked human bodies that will be marching through New York City with nothing but paint on them and on this incredible event. So, and Andy is here to tell us about all of that. Before we bring Andy on, however, I do want to bring on my illustrious co-host, Brody Levesque, for some news of the day. Brody, good evening.
Good evening, Robin. Good evening to all of our listeners. And I appreciate y'all coming back for another week of Rated LGBT Radio. Today was one of those interesting days, Rob. I think it probably could be summed up best with a tweet that the President of the United States put out at about 9 o'clock this morning. I meet and talk to foreign governments every day. I just met with the Queen of England, UK, the Prince of Wales, W-H-A-L-E-S, the PM of the United Kingdom, the PM of Ireland, the President of France, the President of Poland. We talked about everything. Should I immediately? And then it went on. It was the Prince of Wales comment that got everybody going. And all day long, he has been seriously trolled for that misspelling. But what I thought was especially ironic and funny was that a group of individuals in Wales, W-A-L-E-S, took their Welsh flag, and then they superimposed a humpback red whale on it. And so it's been kind of fun playing with him on that. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, it was announced in a presidential tweet today, will be leaving by June 30th. For those of us in the Washington and White House press corps, I think I speak for all of my colleagues. Yeah, not soon enough. Sanders, as you know, has had a very acrimonious relationship with us in the press corps, on top of the fact that she lies, like her boss, a lot. And is pretty shameless about it, as a matter of fact. There was another story that happened today. There was a lawsuit that's going on
Brody,
Carolina. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Brody, before you go to North Carolina, let's back up on the Sanders thing. The one thing that I have not heard, and I'm hoping you have some insight, insight on this is the big question, why? As you pointed out, she's perfectly fit for the job. She seems to plug right in and do exactly what he would want her to do. So why do you think she's leaving?
Some of the folks that we've been talking to have indicated that she is actually seriously considering a run at the gubernatorial chair in her native Arkansas. If you'll remember, her father was governor there starting in 1996. And it wouldn't be terribly surprising if she decided to make a run for that office. I think the other part of it is she is universally despised in Washington circles. Her relationship with the press, well, she doesn't have a relationship with the press, to be honest with you, Rob. I think that most reporters have pretty much given up on her. She, as you know, has publicly had spats with Jim Acosta of CNN. She and April Ryan from the Black Urban Radio Network have had an extremely acrimonious relationship. And I think the other part of it is that, you know, she's in a position where, you know, at this point in a presidency, it's actually not abnormal for press secretaries to swap. So it's not exactly abnormal in terms of presidential administrations. I mean, we saw that in the Obama administration, we saw it in the Bush administration, even Clinton. So it's not really outside the norm. And she has been in the job for 3 years. Which is actually a pretty long time for a press secretary. But I think overall, I think that she's probably looking for greener pastures. And if she is serious about making a run at governor, I believe that race would be 2020. Now would be the time to bail the White House so that she could go set up a campaign and, you know, put all the ducks in a row so she could make a run for the governor's chair in Little Rock.
Thus Trump's comment to that effect in the speech today. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So sorry, let's go to North Carolina, Brody. What's that about?
Well, North Carolina, Nicholas Sparks is a prolific romance writer who, of course, is best known for his novels, The Notebook and A Walk to Remember, and he had founded a preparatory school in Newbern, North Carolina. It was called the Epiphany School of Global Studies. It was a faith-based academy focusing on world issues, languages, things like that. The mission statement of the school of about, I think it has like 500 students, described itself as anchored in Judeo-Christian ethics and ethos. And this is where the problem ran in. They had hired a headmaster, and the headmaster had come in, and then there were some issues there. The guy didn't last very long on the job, and then this headmaster found himself locked in a legal battle, not only with Sparks, okay, but the CEO, and there was a pattern that the lawsuit laid out of harassment, racism, and homophobia. Well, as a part of the discovery process during the trial thing, the Daily Beast did an excellent exclusive job of going through, pulling these emails. And, yeah, they're not very complimentary of Mr. Sparks. You know, he's a bit of an ass. And he's a little on the racist side of life. And he's a little on the homophobic side of life. And he's just, he's exactly what you would expect for someone from that area in terms of a throwback to, you know, white racist and let's just have a good time type thing. And the emails themselves that the Daily Beast published are pretty damning. So that's just kind of what's going on with that case. And that one crossed my radar screen earlier today. And I thought, you know, that I would mention that. And then one last thing before we get to Andy. The Gallup polling organization just completed a poll, and in the poll, a slight majority of Americans, 53%, over half a little bit, say that new civil rights laws are needed to reduce discrimination against LGBTQ people. Now, this comes 1 month after the House, of course, passed the Equality Act, which would protect LGBTQ people from discrimination in employment, housing, and other settings. I think what's really telling about this, and of course this is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, is the fact that we are still only at that kind of number in terms of overalls with the American public, and I think a lot of that has to do with perception. And kind of dovetailing with that, Rob, of course, as you know, yesterday was the third anniversary of Pulse, and that, you know, it was a situation that there was still a lot of vitriol being put out in social media yesterday about Pulse and some of the things some of the things that were said were just, you know, quite frankly, just despicable. But it speaks to the fact that there's still a long way to go. And, you know, what's interesting is I had a conversation with Andy, our guest, and you're going to love Andy. I just fell in love with him. He's just so articulate. But listen to what he has to say about messaging about humans and human rights and love and listening. And I think that it's really going to be kind of critically important, especially when we get polling numbers like that, you know, where you've got that kind of thing happening. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And with that, I'll let you do your host thing, but that's all we got for the week, basically.
Well, no, that's excellent. And, I mean, Andy's message is well taken. I mean, divisiveness is rampant. I mean, you mentioned the Pulse anniversary, and while that is being recognized in the area and elsewhere about what the tragedy that happened there, just a few miles away, there's a church that is wanting to do Make America Straight Again conference at the exact same time. You know, divisiveness is definitely on the playing field. And I am anxious to hear Andy's vision on that. So with that, Mindy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Andy, I want to step back before we go into the conceptual vision of it, but I want to take it back to your art form. Skin painting is kind of a really wonderful niche artistic expression. I, for one, was a huge fan of the Skin Wars that I think was three seasons. That was a competition between different skin artists. What is the state of the art in terms of model painting and skin art today?
I don't know. I mean, I just sort of, everything I'm doing and I've been doing has been really by following my heart as an artist. And it's something that has evolved all the way from doodling in school to painting on, you know, cutout wood, to painting on walls, to cars, to mannequins, to people, to doing it in public around the world. And it's a sort of a strange thing because I haven't really been, like, planning it or defining it. I've really just been doing it. And I really just sort of – it's, I guess, like, being an artist is a little bit of a curse and a blessing in a way, because I'm just sort of following this inspiration of this strong feeling of this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think it's a great ride, and I think it's all based on love for my fellow human being. And it sort of took me to this particular place here and now, and I think it's continuing to move and grow. And so I don't even really sort of think of myself so much as, like, as a particular – I mean, obviously I'm a body painter because I paint people, but I really don't – I just think of myself as an artist or as a person, I guess.
What attracted you to doing – hold on, Bray. I want to just ask one follow-up.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
What attracted you to painting on bodies? And I'm asking this more not so much from the idea of, you know, any squirmishness about the human body, but more from the standpoint that this is a canvas that is going to get washed, that your art won't stay on it like a canvas would, where, you know, that'll last for years. This will last only until the person washes. What attracted you to that medium?
Well, I think one of the differences between, like, art and music is that music sort of has a time component to it, and therefore it has, like, a real energy and a power to it. I mean, art has its own kind of power, but the adding a time element to it, as you're talking about, sort of it forces you to sort of really appreciate the moment and not really be focused on what's this art going to be, but what is this art in the present. And it's sort of, I don't know, it's like if you do a painting and you know that the painting is going to disappear, it's going to change the whole way that you look at the painting. And you kind of let go of the idea of like, oh, this will be my masterpiece or this will be worth $1 million, and just really focus on what you're doing. And specifically, there's a very strange, intimate, and I think a lot of most body artists probably would say the same, I think, is that there's like a really strong, like kind of intimate connection between the artist and model. And it's almost, I think it's somewhat spiritual or psychic. And well, that's it.
That's brilliant, actually. That's a brilliant answer. Brody?
Well, no, I just, one of the things when Andy and I were talking was that really struck me the most is that Andy's canvases, you know, albeit they're the human form, but they completely embrace and encompass the entire spectrum. Andy has painted folks who are that have physical limitations and maybe in wheelchairs. And Andy told me that they come in, you know, the various, you know, shapes and sizes that, you know, we as humans come in. But the one thing that struck me probably the most was that he felt that his art was, you know, the essence of who we are as human beings. And the one thing, and I really want him to talk about this, is that it's all about the love in the human heart and rising up above, you know, the messages of hatred and divisiveness, which, of course, is what Saturday's, thing's going to be about. But, Andy, I wanted to have you talk a little bit with Rob about that, because that was one thing in our conversation that I thoroughly just latched on to, if you don't mind.
Thank you. Sure. I mean, I probably will answer things differently, but but feel free to just jump in anytime and ask me specific questions or whatever. I think that basically the way in which the world is presented to us is very different than the way the world is. And what I mean by that is that the idea of there being like a left-right paradigm, I mean, I'm not saying that there's not truth to it, and I'm not saying that there's not real political issues that are real and that do sort of separate people ideological, but I think that at the essence of what makes us human beings is, I think, very, very different. Like, if I was to break down what it is to be a person, I would say, fear, love, hope, confusion, dignity, connection, faith, God, and I don't know, anger, frustration, feelings of powerlessness, like the things that really at the essence of who we are is not inherently a Republican or a Democrat. And I would even say it's not even, if you were to take those words, that it would be very difficult to take almost any political viewpoint and assign it to, well, these are what the fear people are doing. Because everybody has fear, and how we, how we deal with it, you know, is I don't really know what else to say about that, but I think basically at the end, the things that make us the same is far more than the things that sort of separate us. And I think that, you know, people have kind of gotten into this place where they talk as if they think that they know you because of the fact of, you know, what you look like or how old you are, or even if you say, I believe in this issue, they think that they know why you believe in that issue or what that even means to you. And we're all coming from such different places with different parents and upbringings and insecurities and, you know, senses of self that I think that you know what I used to do is I remember I'd watch like a TV show and I'd see like these two people, like, you know, and I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I definitely come from the, historically, I come from the left side of things. And I remember I'd be watching, like, you know, on some TV show, there'd be like two guys and they'd be debating something, you know, and they'd be like, they said, you know, this guy here is the Democrat and this guy here is the Republican. And I remember looking and I'd look at the Republican guy and I'd be like, yeah, I can tell that guy's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell that, you know, and then all of a sudden they'd say, you know, and in fact I was wrong. It was actually the other guy was the Republican. And then I just immediately like switched my whole perception of seeing the softness in his eyes and versus seeing the closed-mindedness in his eyes. And I think that if we're really aware of how much we bring our own idea of right and wrong, and that how much that infects our ability to truly be open to each other and truly be loving to each other and truly just like hear each other out and truly express ourselves without anticipating that this person's going to be a jerk or is not going to understand us, you know, and not be frustrated, I think that we really can't even imagine how immeasurable the progress that we can make.
No, I think that's wonderful. In fact, it's funny because about years ago when I first registered to vote, I was raised as a Republican. I mean, I was raised in a household that was based on the premise that you just described, that Republican meant good and right about everything and Democrat meant wrong and bad about everything. And when I registered to vote, I shocked my mother because, and she was a registrar for voting, and she said, "Well, which party?" Thinking, you know, I would just automatically say Republican. And I said, "I want to register as a Democrat." And she was like, "Oh my God, why? What? You know, where did we go wrong?" Kind of thing. And the answer was exactly what you just described. Was, you know, I want to walk in those shoes because I don't want to think just because somebody's under that label that everything is automatically bad. And ironically, you know, now I'm, you know, if I were labeling, I would be that anyway. But also in talk radio, it does drive me crazy. My other show is on the most conservative radio station in town, and the other shows, you know, every opinion leads is a generalization about the left. And it creates this caricature of what a person from the left is. And ironically, when I talk to left people who are more progressive, their caricature of a conservative is exactly the same thing that's being described by the conservative about a left person. So there's this demoned person in the middle that both are describing the other one as. So, I mean, that's just underscoring everything you just said. But, Andy, so you started a nonprofit called Human Connection Arts. Is bringing humanity together your core vision? And if so, why did you pick that?
I mean, I think so. And I think I mean, basically what happened is that I found myself getting into body painting as a just a natural progression of my art. And then I started, you know, painting, and I was like, this is a really cool process. I saw like there was like this transformation that was taking place, and I wanted to do it on the streets. And I was doing it on the street, and it's legal. And the first time I did it, I actually did it with a girl wearing a bikini. And then it was like gradually became topless, and it just sort of kept like, you know, kind of growing. And when I was first doing it, it was like say 2009. And like people would come up to me, like press people, they'd come up to me and they'd say like, you know, why are you doing this? And I would give different answers to who I was speaking to. And I didn't really know why, you know? So some people I would say, you know, why are you doing this? I'm like, you know, I'm trying to inspire other people to follow their heart. But then another press person would come up to me and I don't know, I guess I didn't like them as much. And they'd say, why are you doing this? And I would be like, I don't know, I'm just drawing pictures, man. I'm just an artist making art, you know? And I think both are true. And so I think that there's like this really cool tension between doing something because it feels right to me and doing something because I'm actually trying to like make an impact on the world. And I don't think those things are like mutually exclusive. And I think that while I feel like this almost like an engine where I'm trying to heal myself, and at the same time I'm trying to heal the world. And it's kind of weird, but on the same token, I think that it's like it keeps me in check because as I kind of progress and things, we're doing these really cool events and they're getting better. I kind of constantly look at myself and I say, like, how do I make myself better? And then instead of looking at other people and saying, why can't you guys be as good as me? I just sort of look and I just kind of feel like I just keep fluctuating between the two.
So you just mentioned events that you put on. In 2 days from now, and I was just part of putting on an event, so I know what I'm talking about. You have this huge event going on in New York City. One, quite frankly, the fact that you're able to sit here with us and be so calm is astounding because of what you have coming up in 2 days. But you're going to be body painting over 100 nude models. How many of them are you personally going to be painting, and how many are going to – how big is the painting team?
I think we're going to probably have like around 70 or 75 models and about like 9 artists, something like this. But the models help with the painting, and it's not like we run this big event called Body Painting Day where we get it's much more like one or two models per artist. But here what we're doing is we're like laying large amounts of color base coating on everybody, and we're putting sayings that each model chooses their own saying under the theme of unity, and then we paint them on in black letters over like whatever kind of nice pretty colors, and we're doing it in the front and the back, so every person becomes almost like not just a work of art but like an expression, and the people are nude, so there's something like a vulnerability to it and honesty to it, like here I am. I've always kind of felt like when I've seen like people do like protests where they're like really angry about something and then they say, now you're going to get it. And they take all their clothes off. Like that's this thing that's offensive, like an attack. And I always felt that the body is really beautiful and we should never, use it in a way other than to try to beautify the world and to connect and really, you know, have love. And so I think ultimately that's what it always is. And I think ultimately everybody just has an opportunity to have a voice. And I think that if people have a voice, then I think I really just believe that love will prevail. And I just want to say, like, I don't know how much, like, you want to – I don't want to say stuff that's too strong, but, I mean, it's sort of like it's not like I don't – it's not like I don't believe in hate. But I think that hate is very misunderstood because I think really hate is really about a person feeling like nobody cares about them and nobody loves them and nobody will listen to them and they feel powerless. And I think that we really would be very, very surprised at people that are so defined as hateful. And I'm not saying that there's not things that people do that really are hurtful, but I think that the vast majority of people, if you give them just genuine understanding, I think that the amount of progress we can make in sort of softening people up and making people listen to us is something that is very under whatever. The people don't, you know, you get it.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredibly valid. Brody?
In our conversation that we had, a couple of things that you said to me that really stuck with me. Well, actually, a lot of what you said stuck with me, and I'm a pretty cynical political reporter. But, the expressions that you had in terms of things, for example, and Rob, this was kind of one of the cool things that Andy said to me that it really kind of stuck with me. Willingness, and I'm quoting him, willingness to be nude is a powerful expression. It's a vulnerability, and you're exposing the soul because the clothes allow us to misrepresent or to protect us. Would you mind kind of explaining that whole thing to Rob? I got it. I thought it was powerful, but if you don't mind, Andy, kind of like expand on that, please.
Sure. I guess, and I would say that when we do paintings and there's people are nude, whether it's a man or a woman or someone older or someone younger or someone really large or someone really buff or whatever, like people will look and they'll say, like, not all the time. I mean, the vast majority of people get it and I think are really comfortable and cool with it, or, you know, but there's some people like think that this, what about the children? Like, what if the children, what are you doing? I mean, what are you doing? And there's some people that get like really, really mad, as if like the source of all of the things that are going wrong in the world is like centered here. And I feel that when we have impose a sense of shame about the human body, we end up basically having a sense of shame about ourselves. I think that it's sort of like if you look at yourself and you see yourself as inherently bad, then basically how can your relationship with the world around you be anything but bitter?
So I've got a very weird question for you, Andy, along those lines, just to get your opinion on this. But, you know, I think it's really – almost humorous at the truth of what you just said. I mean, children are born naked and everything else, and yet if they see a naked person, it's like people get irate and freaked out and all of that. But there's also a standard in our society that a female nude is somehow not quite as that to that level of outrage as if a man's penis is seen visibly. Like, the penis is the ultimate in shameful revelations if it's seen. What is your feelings about that?
I mean, I agree with you 100%. And I was always like, even when I look at photos, like, and I see the man, I see, you know, the penis, and it's like there's a, well, I think what it does is it just reveals where we're at as a society. And I think that's what sort of I love about, like, this whole kind of idea of what this public body painting is about, because I'm really not going at it with a specific, like, agenda. What it does is it just sort of – it sort of has a, like, the ability to sort of strip the layers and sort of just expose the truth. And the truth is that, you know, men are really looked at in a very like a predatorial kind of way. And so the, you know, even when I see pictures of men and women standing next to each other, it's like there's such a natural, like, not natural, but in our culture, this way that when I see the picture, when I see the women standing next to the man and the man's naked and the women are not like, oh my God, get this guy away from me, that there's something just, you can just feel that this is like this natural relationship that men and women have and hear their bodies. And it really, to me, it just shows how far we've come as a society away from where we really are as natural human beings. And that's, I think, in a sense, I'm very, very proud to sort of have exposed that, at least if no one else, to myself.
Yeah, no, I mean, while you're talking, I'm just thinking it through as well, because it's ironic, the penis is the one part of nudity across both genders that exposes what the person is erotically, emotionally feeling. I mean, the other parts of the body do to some extent, but none to the level that the penis is. It is the most revealing of other things that are going on. And I don't know if that plays into it, but it's just intriguing, kind of the landscape there. I want to shift a little bit because I don't want to not talk about this part of it on the program here, but tell us about the event. You know, what is going on? You know, how is the event going to flow? The music that you have part of it. I am so jealous as hell that I'm not in New York City this weekend, I have to tell you, because I would love to be observing this. So tell us what we will be missing if we're not there.
Well, I mean, what we have is that we are going to have a larger number, around, you know, 75 or so fully nude men and women of all shapes and sizes getting painted, each with their own messages of unity of all people on their bodies, being painted live in the center of Times Square on Broadway between 43rd and 44th Street from noon to 2 p.m. And then at 2 p.m. we're going to march down 20 blocks from Times Square towards the Flatiron Building, making a stop at 34th Street for a quick photo shoot with the Empire State Building in the background. And then we continue on to the Flatiron Building at 23rd Street and Broadway, where we're going to have a song circle led by Guy Davis, who's this tremendously great soulful like singer. And we're going to be singing like songs that are like sort of to some extent, like inspired by Pete Seeger, but whatever Guy wants to play and however he wants to do it, it's just something that, you know, brings everybody. It's like a culmination of the whole thing. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, it's called a protest, but really it's a celebration. And it's basically all about celebrating who we are as human beings. And I think obviously the world is big and I'm pretty small, but I think that, you know, the idea of sort of saying, hey, we can all love each other and here's how we do it and we show it. I think that it's probably hard to measure exactly the limits of how powerful that can be.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely amazing. Brody?
Well, talking about that for a second, painting on a body is more than just an abstract thing. It's a very personal thing. Give me an idea of some of the feedback that you get from the models, after you've executed the artwork, because, as you and I talked on the phone, there's parts for genuine acceptance for who you are and who you want to be and labels and, speaking minds and things like that. But I mean, a body painting is a very real personal statement. What's some of the things that your models have, told you about their experiences with you as an artist and being your canvas?
Well, it's a funny thing. I mean, it's a very intimate thing. It's a very trusting, relationship. And what, for one reason or another, I'm just sort of very built when I see people, like when I do my art, it's sort of like my art's more elevated than I am. It's a weird thing to say, but it's like when I, as an artist, when I see a person, like I don't really make judgments of who they are. I just look at them and I'm like, how do I fit a face in this shape and this form? And so there's just this really high level of acceptance. And without really thinking about it, just focusing on my art, I think people very often feel a level of acceptance that they may never feel in other cases or in other times. And so there's just this sort of like really powerful positive experience. And then when all of a sudden if people come and they, let's say if people see it and they don't like it, for instance, it's like they have like their own agenda and they're not realizing the powerful like sense of connection that's going on. Like I don't really, it's not like I'm angry about it, but it's just sort of like we're more powerful than that. Like, and so the idea of like hitting these really central places and putting ourselves like in the most central places we can, it's clearly we're not afraid. We're not afraid of who we are. I find that the models that put their bodies out there, and I think probably everybody to some extent has like body issues. It's just, they're really, I have so much admiration for them to put themselves in that vulnerable position. I feel like I didn't answer your question, but I'll just say this, that like, for me, it's like by focusing on the art, like I sort of almost disconnect from like the literalness of stuff. So like, I know that a lot of my models, like, have had cancer or have had, like major eating disorders or have had like, different illnesses. And, I mean, some of them are in wheelchairs or people that are just, very old. Like, it's like everybody sort of has their own like issue that they're going through that sort of, this is like part of that journey. And I've historically, I've kind of like not really tried paying too close attention to that journey. I've really just focused on, like, just making the art. And I think that the thing that's sort of magical to me is that the art actually is like a it's like I'm reading the person. Like, it becomes it's interpretive art. Like, and it's like pretty intense. Like, it's like I'm really reading them and feeling them. And it's not like I'm conscious of it when I'm doing it. I'm just thinking, all I'm thinking is I just want to make a good painting. But, like, so for instance, like, some paintings are like really colorful, or some are very monochrome, or maybe some of the lines are very jagged, or some I'll make like a face with the tons of fangs or eyes all over the place. Like, it just sort of is like, it's genuinely inspired. And in a sense, like, we don't really care what the painting is, really, as long as it's honest.
That's so true. I mean, it's like, that's the best art, is when you just feel the truth of it and the honesty of it. And while you're speaking, I don't know why this takes me back, but because you know, the political landscape is so divisive, and you know, it's, I mean, and honestly, I can't even in my lifetime remember when it was this divisive. I mean, I'm sure it was, because we've had some real fractures between civil rights and people being really oppressed, and people being oblivious to it. And so it may have been underground, but it just seems so surfacely divisive right now. And one candidate who is running, who gets virtually no press at all, and she's running on the Democratic side, is author Marianne Williamson, who comes from speaking and lecturing on A Course in Miracles. And A Course in Miracles is based on something, Andy, that, and this is why I'm mentioning this, that I hear very reflective of everything you've talked about, because A Course in Miracles goes from a core level of spirituality that there are only two elements. One is love and the other is fear. And, you know, it's like, it's, that's the light and the dark, and that's what is core between all of us. And the, what you described in the art of the model stepping out is truly a demonstration of fearlessness, walking nude through one of the biggest cities of the world, and certainly the world's, a city that has the world's eyes on it almost constantly. So just that act alone is an exhibit of fearlessness, i.e., in a spiritual sense, love in itself. And so I'm hoping Marianne Williamson is watching, because I think this is an event that, you know, if she stays true to her core philosophy that put her on the roadmap at all, that I hope she takes this into the political stage, because she could be the one that could talk about this more than almost anybody else. So you would think I was leading up to a question, so I actually will. What is the ultimate effect that you want people, the public at large, who come across this event this weekend through whatever means they happen to fall into it, what do you want them to walk away with?
Thank you. I mean, I think that all the things you said, I mean, that was really, you know, really great stuff. And I tell you what I've been really thinking of lately is that as human beings, what we feel is we have two things going on at the same time. We have cooperation and competition, and I think on some level you always need both. And but where you draw the line between competition and cooperation is important, and being aware of what that means is essential. So basically, the reason why human beings have competition and cooperation is because we're like in tribes. Like, that's, you know, genetically, like, we're built to be in tribes. So we cooperate with our tribe, and we compete with the other tribe, because, you know, we have to work together, right? As a pack, to protect ourselves from the other packs, because the other packs, you know, they might kill us. So I think there's this natural kind of inside outside thing, and the world, because of the fact that we're built this way, the question really is who's our people, and who are they, and who's the friends, and who's the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because of the fact that not only is America a melting pot, I mean, that's it's over, like this idea of like everybody just living in their own right space. Not only is America not a melting pot, the world's a melting pot. So now basically, if we look at any group as the them and we're going to compete with them, then all you're just going to have is just perpetual warfare, perpetual hatred, perpetual competition, it just basically we have to look at humanity. In my opinion, I just believe that the solution to all of the our problems is sort of to look at humanity as a race, as one. And then you say, you know, mm-hmm. Where's the competition go to? Well, then the competition goes to is like, how do we overcome our fears and how do we overcome our challenges? I mean, it's not like we're ever going to find that there's it's not like we're ever going to find like life is so good that it's boring. Like, what are we going to do that we really need this sort of anger towards each other to kind of keep this thing spiced up? I think life is endlessly challenging and we need to basically just all come together as one. As far as I'm concerned, that is the energy that towards basically everything being good, and the other one's the energy of everything just continuing on the road that it's been going on. And that's the energy behind everything that I do. And when people kind of participate in my events or appreciate my events and then sort of don't really kind of see that or appreciate that or connect to that, then I'm kind of always like a little bit like, why don't you see, like, I'm a little kind of surprised. And so that's one of the reasons like why I kind of went from doing like things where we're just painting pretty pictures, not just pretty pictures, but like meaningful paintings on people to like literal words. Like, okay, like I'm going to spell it out. We're going to spell it out. This is, this, you know, because it's almost like there's so much being bombarded, you know, at us that's constantly, we're constantly, each one of us is being triggered in one way or another, distracted from the love in our heart, that we actually need to almost take it up a notch and be really, really clear. Like, I love you, and it's really important that you understand that. And then now can we move forward? And I don't know, that's all I got.
No, I think that's brilliant. I just, as you were talking, I was kind of aware of kind of a paradox in that if you de-tribe everybody and you look at everyone as part of this blend of humanity, ironically, when you then step down to an individual level, you kind of have to approach it with nakedness because you can't assume any knowledge about this person in front of you, where the thing about tribing is that you assume everything about that person. You identify who they are and their tribe, and you take your set of generalizations about that said tribe, apply it on that individual in front of you, and all of a sudden you feel powerful, like you have knowledge over this person that you just met, and you actually know absolutely nothing about. And it gives you this false sense of information that you really don't have. And so it's just, I think this is core, and I think it's super important. I couldn't be more enthusiastic about, you know, the work and the intention and everything that you're doing with this. What are your next steps? What happens after this event?
I don't know. You know, first of all, I'd like to say I thought your words were great there too. I really appreciate it. I do feel like, in a sense, that this is like an important moment for me. You know, I've been running the organization Human Connection Arts for a few years, and we did I'm not going to get it. I mean, we're basically. We have Body Painting Day in New York City in July, and we're actually going to have a Switzerland Body Painting Day in August. We're going to be doing an event I call Chalk Art Day. It's the second one. It's the second one, the second annual, I guess, where we do large chalk art drawings in Washington Square Park on September 11th. And we basically, I mean, I can go into the details of it. I mean, maybe it's sort of, I mean, it's up to you, but I mean, basically challenging things through art, because art really is inherently, it's at a higher level, of seeing things than politics are, and sort of, you know, and I think that ultimately, I'd like to thank you really for giving me this opportunity to just say all these words, because if you really, the vast majority of stuff that you'll hear in the press is almost, it's not just divisive, that's the purpose of it, really. I mean, that's, you know, I had this,
right.
I'm not going to mention the show, but there's one particular show where guests come on and they say things and they make the other side look so stupid. And then the other side makes that side look so stupid. And I just had this idea of, like, what if Martin Luther King, like, came on to, like, you know, politically incorrect, oops. And, like, you know, and he's like, everyone started, like, kind of bonding around him. And then they'd be like, this guy is not allowed on the show ever again. Like, that, you know, because the whole system is really built on the polarity of things, and so
right.
The idea that, like, it's almost like people almost feel like, well, what would we talk about if, like, we weren't polarized? And the truth is that, don't worry about it. I promise you, don't worry about it. Life will never get boring. You don't need war for life to be interesting. I promise you. It keeps getting more interesting as life gets more subtle, as you understand yourself more, as you see other people more, the wonderful, powerful, positive energies that exist in the world will be so overwhelmingly positive that you'll feel like you're bursting with joy. We don't have to worry. We are not dependent on the polarization at all. We're not.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And in fact, it's funny because what's happened through social media and, you know, talk radio and everything else is the people of the polls run to their own poll. And so and to be crass about it, it's sort of like a call to mutual masturbation on all sides, where everybody goes to where they get all frenzied together to almost an orgasmic state, you know, when there's been no real discussion and no real insight, no real understanding other people at all. And I think what you described in terms of it coming together where people actually try to understand each other, that that would actually be the most fascinating and the most enlightening and the most moving thing that could actually happen. So, I think you're absolutely correct in that. Andy, we're getting down to that point in the show where hopefully we've hooked our listeners into being as fascinated as I know I am. But now we need some logistics. I mean, how do they find out more? Who can attend? Are there websites supporting this? How do they get more involved?
Oh, thank you. You know, it's actually, I just remembered that the one thing that I didn't say is that when we do the march from Times Square at 43rd Street down to the Flatiron Building at 23rd Street and Broadway, that march is open to everyone. And so everybody who believes in unity and everybody who wants to participate in our protest against divisiveness, you are 100% welcome to join us. You do not have to be naked. You do not have to be painted. And we would love if everyone came together in that way. The organization is called Human Connection Arts, and the website is humanconnectionarts.org. We're on social media, and we are a nonprofit organization, and we survive off of the kind generosity of people who appreciate the message, and we're dedicated to doing everything in our power to sort of living this message and continuing this message as far and wide as possible.
Incredible. And Andy, thank you so much for being with us tonight. You're brilliant. I'm really very excited for everything you're doing. And like I said, I'm absolutely devastatingly jealous that I'm on the West Coast and can't be in New York City this weekend to see this, because it sounds incredible. Brody, I want to turn over to you for the last question here. We're at the end of the show.
Well, yeah, we're at the end of the show. I just wanted to make a statement following through from what Andy and I talked about earlier in the week. I would actually encourage, if you're in the New York area, the tri-state, to please attend. The whole point to this is, what can we do to contribute and make a positive difference, not only in our own lives, but in the lives of others. I think that what Andy and the Human Connection people are doing is just absolutely phenomenal. And again, I encourage everybody in the tri-state and in all five boroughs that if they've got the time, they need to go down. And, yeah, let's participate in this. And with that, I'll throw it back to you, Rob.
Okay. So, Andy, again, any final last words that you want to get across? We're literally down to our final seconds here.
Saturday, June 15th, Times Square, from noon to 2 p.m. And on the same day, from 3 to 3:30 at the Flatiron Building, come out and be a part of the joy and the unity. We hope to see you there. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to, again, folks, I want to thank Andy so much for being on. And you can follow him on Twitter, because I have, at Andy Golub on Twitter. You know, actually, I want to ask you to do one thing. Besides supporting this event and attending it and being visible to it and talking about it, I really, really, really want you to hear what Andy said tonight and his message behind this. I think that is paramount. I think this is something that would behoove us all, to save the planet, to save ourselves, and to save our sanity and our hearts, to listen to this message and embrace it. I think we could do no wrong if we do that. I want to thank Brody for, again, putting together a brilliant show, as co-host and producer. And you can hear Brody again next week here on Rated LGBT Radio. We will be back next Thursday night again. And also listen to Out in Santa Cruz. That's my show on Saturday nights, and you can hear that on www.ksco.com. That's Saturday, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, with more LGBTQ topics. And for myself, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate you more than anything else in the whole wide world, and we will be talking to you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.